Henry, hit the theme song. Thank you for actually completing the song for me, Henry. Welcome back to This Is Rocket Science, the Columbia Space Initiative, the official Columbia Space Initiative podcast. I'm one of the official hosts, David Tibbetts.
I'm the other official host, Henry Minelski.
We will pass on the mantle someday, won't we? We're going to have to.
Presumably, yeah. I mean, we're going to graduate.
We're going to graduate. And, like, what are we going to do? Like,
well, fingers crossed, we're going to graduate.
Fingers crossed, we'll graduate. I think we'll pass it on to someone. We'll get some new hosts in.
Yeah. They have to, you know, have our same taste in memes, though.
They do. Well, you should have interviews.
I don't want to see this become, like, an academic, like, learn stuff kind of podcast. You know, that would be a shame. This is the second episode. The first non-interview episode of season three.
Season three? Wow, we've been doing this for a while now, haven't we?
Yeah. All right, so...
We've been gone for an entire summer now. A lot of stuff has happened. Of course, incredible stuff like the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission. The moon landing. One of the greatest events in all of humankind.
Or was it?
In all of human history.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think so.
That's fair.
Yeah. Landing on the moon, pretty big deal.
Yeah, pretty big. I think we can only top that by, like, landing on Mars or something.
That would be cool.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, one day people are going to listen to this podcast, like, 50 years from now, and be like, man, they thought Mars was cool. I'm landing on Jupiter. Can't land on Jupiter.
No.
Can't land on Jupiter.
Jupiter's
gashed. Yeah. But, I mean, the moons. Go to the moons. That'd be kind of cool. That'd be really cool, actually, man.
Jupiter's moons?
Yeah.
Jupiter's moons would be insane.
That'd be insane.
Europa? Oof, Europa. What a moon. Ganymede, Callisto. Such great. Io's kind of mediocre, but...
Yeah. We should make a moons of Jupiter tier list.
No, moons of Saturn. There's more, like, diversity in moons of Saturn.
What about just moons of the entire solar system tier list?
Sure. We could do that.
That'd be pretty funny.
Yeah. Should we do that right now?
Well, I don't know all the moons.
Ship of Woods. Oh no, that's not a true space.
Okay, name more than 20 rocks. Checkmate.
Is this a rock podcast, David?
It's in the name.
This is rock. It's science.
This is rock and science.
We don't have any, you know, script for today. We have no idea what's going on. Micah's not here to ask us fun questions.
But so
we just have Reddit open, the space subreddit.
I just saw something about the Indian moon probe.
Yep. F in the chat.
That's an enormous F in the chat. Big ripperoni in pepperoni.
I guess it's the second sort of high profile moon lander mission that has not gone according to plan.
Did it have a rapid, unexpected disassembly?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. An RUD. Yeah. It actually... So they apparently found it, like, a few days later, tilted on the surface, having not landed properly. But I find that kind of questionable because they thought the impact velocity was, like, you know, like, a couple dozen meters per second or something like that. And at that speed, like, it's not going to be in one piece when it hits the ground. It's going to be in many, many pieces. So, and they couldn't establish radio contact with it, so.
Definitely a certified bruh moment.
Mm-hmm. Not as unsuccessful as the Israeli lander one, though, because that one, they found out this summer, actually was packed with tardigrades, that small, almost like cell sized, like, weird looking organism thing.
Yeah, the super, like, adaptable,
the super durable ones.
Like, yeah. Little, they're animals, aren't they? They're technically animals.
I guess they're animals. They're
I'm not a biologist.
Super small.
Do you know? I'm looking it up.
They smashed into the surface and just scattered it all on the moon's surface, just completely contaminating.
They are indeed.
Do we just contaminate the moon?
Wait, so.
We did a little bit, yeah. So I mean, they're going to die eventually. Yes, but there's life on the moon. We put it there, so it's not really that fun.
The first life on the moon was 50 years ago.
That also happened this summer. There was the 50th
anniversary. That's right, that was at the very beginning, wasn't it?
Yeah. July 20th.
Yeah, I remember that a little bit.
I went to a comedy show that our very own professor and former astronaut Mike Massimino was participating in. It was an improv comedy show. It was very fun. It was at the Intrepid. They had the whole day was packed with space activities. It was fun.
Now, for those who do not know, the USS Intrepid is a previously used aircraft carrier of the U.S. Navy, which is docked here in New York City. It's now a really cool museum you can go to. They have a lot of space stuff there, too, because they actually house one of the space shuttles there.
Pronounce museum again.
Oh, museum? Museum? Sorry, guys.
People in Arizona apparently call it museum.
Yeah, we call it museum.
It's weird.
What are we talking about next? Oh, let's do an ad read. This podcast was made possible by Audible. Audible is the leading provider of audiobooks. They have over 5 minutes of audiobooks to choose from. Visit www.audible.com and use code word Elon at checkout for a free smell.
All right, Ad Astra. I didn't see it, but we have someone here who has. John Luca was able to go to a CSI event with Professor Massimino, where they saw Ad Astra. What did you think of it?
I thought it was good. It had a lot of good visual. Close enough.
You can talk into the mic.
Hey, you're good. Keep talking.
Is it like this is a reasonable distance?
That's a good distance.
Yeah, I don't know.
I thought it was good. A lot of great visual scenes. A few unbelievable things like Moon to Mars travel in 20 days, but, you know, technologies.
You can't win them all, you know?
Yeah, there was a nice Mad Max lunar rover scene, so there were, like, pirates.
I saw that in the trailer.
Yeah, so that was a really good scene, and I'd say it's worth a watch.
I have a Reddit post here which disagrees with you. It says, Ad Astra is not a space movie. I just saw Ad Astra, and just so everyone else knows, it is not a space movie in any form. Is it take place in space? Anyways,
yes.
He says he goes on. It is a dealing with daddy issues movie that takes place in space that has no respect for physics.
Is this Interstellar? Listen, okay. The one thing I'm confused about Ad Astra, looking at it, it just looks like the sadder version of Interstellar. It's
yeah.
Like guy looks for father, or like some person looks for the father in space. Some physics mishaps.
I like space, though. So space. If Hollywood keeps making very high-profile movies about space, I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, I'll see it.
Brad Pitt in a space movie, I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, I love Brad Pitt, but, I mean, as far as it goes, it's like Sigourney Weaver and...
Sandra Bullock. Gravity.
That was such a bad movie.
I never watched that movie. Let's take a moment now. We're complaining a lot about space movies. We should create our ideal space movie plot, including a cast.
Okay.
Definitely needs Dwayne The Rock Johnson. That's my only requirement.
I need Morgan Freeman.
Oh,
God, yes.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Leonardo DiCaprio,
yes, okay.
Can Quentin Tarantino just make a space cowboy movie?
That would be great.
A space cowboy movie?
That would be
space
fun.
This moon ain't big enough for the two of us. I got into debate while I was camping out in Utah on a mining trip about whether or not you could use guns to shoot yourself off the moon.
No, you can't.
Oh, what,
you could use the Paris gun.
We're opening,
but that's a piece of like massive artillery.
We're opening the field to literally any type of weapon that's ever been created by man.
Yeah, then you could totally launch yourself off. I mean, like, there's a lot of
like you could
ballistic
use,
missiles that are essentially rockets.
No, I mean like, if you had like a minigun, you could totally do it, I bet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe.
Cause, like,
I was just thinking about like if you fire one round, could it go into orbit? But if you're just like literally just like pointing a minigun in one direction and firing.
You could totally get a minigun and just launch yourself off the moon.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
it's also a debate that doesn't need to happen. Like, no one's ever gonna do that.
Yeah, it's
would you need oxygen?
No. It has its modern weapons have their own oxidizers in them. So you could do it.
You could do it.
Yeah.
But I don't know anything about the chemistry involved with bullets.
I only know that. I don't know anything about gun chemistry. All I know is space. And that's... a common space question that people ask. That's the only reason that I know guns have their own oxidizers, because I think there was a minute physics video on it.
That makes sense. I found an interesting question here on Reddit that actually involves something, a discussion that occurred over summer. It's talking about terraforming Mars.
Hmm.
Is it possible, and what will be the most effective way of doing it, is the question posed. One of the first responses about what Elon Musk talked about. I think he was slightly memeing when he was saying it.
I think he was memeing a lot.
But talking about the theory of nuking the ice caps. I forget, what is that just... That wouldn't be just a thermal thing. That would also... Was that supposed to, like, melt the ice caps, create an atmosphere? Is that the plan?
Release a lot of CO2, too, because there's a lot of CO2, like, trapped with the ice.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's theoretically what you could use to create an atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be nuking Mars. I think a more effective way is just have a bunch of, like, we're really good at climate change on Earth. Let's just get a bunch of machines to, I don't know anything about rocks, but, like, take a bunch of rocks.
Go on.
Spit out CO2. Have a bunch of, like, rovers going around just pumping CO2 into the atmosphere. Doesn't soil have some, like, or Martian soil? Or
I don't know about the Martian soil. I mean, wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. I'm guessing your better option would be just, like, find a massive, like, formation of limestone. Just dump a bunch of acid on it. That would release a bunch of CO2.
But sort of the fundamental problem with terraforming Mars is that you'd never be done. In the sense that with Earth has a very strong magnetic field, which blocks the solar wind, keeps charged particles from the sun from ripping off the upper layers of our atmosphere. We also have enough gravity that we can hold on to a lot of the lighter molecules. Mars has 1/3 gravity and no magnetic field. So theoretically, if you replenish their atmosphere completely and it was super thick, 100 years later, it would be stripped away. So you need to be constantly pumping more and more CO2. It's doable. And I think one day, hundreds of years from now, we would definitely be able to do it. But there's no like one time
of that. The idea that you could just perpetually...
You'd have to perpetually.
Like geoengineer a foreign planet's atmosphere to make it habitable.
I mean,
is that such a liability? What happens, you know, let's just pretend like, yeah, we're going to make a fake device now that creates your atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if they just automatically stop working? Like, how long would you have in that scenario?
About 100 years.
You have 100 years before atmosphere is gone.
Yeah.
But let's say, you know, you get your atmosphere going, you have several hundred years of life on the planet, the atmosphere center fails. How long is it until it's no longer habitable, or survivable for people to be on?
Well, I don't know.
I think that'd be a fun discussion to have someday.
I highly doubt we would ever be able to pressurize the Martian atmosphere enough and also pressurize it with the right gases.
That's right.
That you'd be able to actually walk around and breathe the air. I don't think that's... I mean,
you'd probably have to add a bunch of mass to Mars.
Yeah, not
gonna happen. I guess you could theoretically create an artificial magnetic field.
That's so...
I don't buy it.
That's future tech right there. That's... So,
That's way more cost than it's worth, I think.
But to answer like the survivability point, like if you're going to be in a spacesuit anyway, like you could just let the atmosphere waste away. I mean, you're in a pressurized spacesuit. You're not breathing any of the air. The sort of idea that it would be great to pressurize the atmosphere and actually get an atmosphere on Mars is like for plants and stuff, start to get an actual like biosphere. It would be a burden to have to replenish the entire atmosphere.
I wonder if you could just skip that and just, like, find a way to just provide atmospheric CO2 straight onto the plants themselves. Because we are, you know, kind of like an irrigation system, but just for gas. Could you do that?
Interesting.
I'm sure someone's thought of that already. Because, like, that'd be way easier if you just had, like, little things that, like, just seep out CO2 right onto your plants.
You should do some research on it. That could be your PhD thesis.
I don't want a PhD. Although Dr. Tibbetts does sound like quite the name.
Why don't you want a PhD?
Because I don't want to spend the rest of my life researching stuff. I want to go out and do applied things. It's kind of part of the engineering creed.
On Mars.
On Mars would be insane.
I don't
aspire to that, because I think that's too far for me. I don't want to like get way beyond myself and like, you know, hopes and stuff. But
okay, the moon.
The moon.
Why not?
Why?
Because the moon Because colonizing the moon would be like the...
Colonizing the moon would be kind of a meme. You could build spaceports on the moon. That'd be cool. But yeah. You don't need like a colony. You could just build a massive structure.
One day we're going to have a colony anyway. We might as well start getting going right now.
Why are we going to have a colony?
On another planet?
Yeah, why would we have to do that?
Because it's kind of depressing that we're just waiting to get, you know, wiped out.
No, but I mean, the thing is a lot of our worst case scenarios, we can engineer our way past them easier than, okay, I'm about to head out.
But at some point in the future, like, if humans are really going to survive
I think Mars would be a worthwhile colony, because it's a whole planet, but the moon is like, but I think that's best as like...
a way station. But at some point, it's going to be a full colony just serving as a
that's
way station.
That's right, anyway. It would eventually just end up as that.
Yeah, I mean, if it starts as a way station, eventually, 1,000 years in the future, there's going to be a city up there.
Like, you're going to have people maintaining it. Yeah. They're going to have to live there, because you're not going to commute from Earth to there. Man, that'd be a crazy commute.
I love that concept.
Space subway.
What I find very interesting is like when I talk to people about like the travel time between here and the International Space Station, people always assume, oh my god, it's space. It probably takes like days to get up to the space station. It actually takes about like 6 hours. In fact, it probably takes about 20 minutes to get to the edge of space. The rest of the 6 hours are just synchronizing your orbits and actually docking. Because it, you know, you're traveling 20,000 miles per hour, it doesn't really take that long to get places.
Yeah, I imagine it wouldn't.
Yeah, but the moon still does take about 3 days.
It is pretty far.
Yeah, 238,000 miles.
I guess at first what you have to do, just because, well, I don't know, because I know a trend that mining industry is moving towards is that they'll have systems where instead of having their mining engineers permanently stationed at the mines, is they'll have them there for like 5 days out of the week and then fly them back to their homes and back every single weekend, just because there's so few of them that they can make that demand. But I mean, you could do a similar thing. Like you'd have like month-long shifts. You go up there for a month, you fly back for a month, or you go up there for 2 months and fly back for a month.
That's how oil fields work in Alaska. People will be in town for a month and then they'll go up to the North Slope for a month and then come back.
So I feel like, especially at first, if you don't have that many people up there, and especially because your supply is going to be so limited because everyone has to be like super highly trained to go to space. Unless you find, you know, a bunch of highly trained guys who are like, yeah, I just want to live on the moon for the rest of my life. I don't know.
I would do that.
You think these are kind of questions that are going to have to be answered when it's actually happening. Because there's just like one little minute difference could change what the industry would look like.
I'm hoping 20 years until we can start practically talking about these kind of things. I hope that in 20 years, commercial space has gotten to the point where Elon Musk has already landed on Mars. Elon Musk has already landed multiple times on the moon. 20 years, I think it'll happen. And then we're going to start thinking about companies are going to start buying Elon Musk's rockets to extract resources from the moon. And boom, that's the exact problem that we're discussing. You know, people need to be there to start mining from the moon, you know?
Sure.
Why not?
You would mine for, like, the helium thing there.
Helium 3, yeah.
But you wouldn't mine for metals. Why not? Because they're not there. You guys want to hear a fun formation of the moon story? This is from based off the geology of the moon that we studied from our multiple trips up there. Little asteroids we studied on Earth that landed here. Effectively, what happened was that as the Earth was cooling, obviously we all know that the Earth got struck by a massive other planetoid body. I forget what it was called.
Theia.
Classic, what a queen. The prevailing theory that has come out of the research is that what must have happened is Theia must have struck the Earth at a pretty steep angle. So when the Earth was cooling, all of the heaviest elements sunk down to the bottom, just as a byproduct of the Earth being completely molten. Actually, as you go deeper into the Earth right now, there's a lot more radioactive material, so there's actually a really strong thermal gradient that isn't actually from just the heat of the core, it's from the rock itself being radioactive. Since it was struck at an angle, only the topmost layers came off of the Earth to form the moon. And those would have been the least dense layers of the planet. So most of the material that formed the moon is not rich in, you know, the metals we'd want to mine, the metals we want to, you know, exploit. That's why you get a lot of your helium stuff there. And it's most of the rock there is like a basalt sort of thing, which is a lot of magnesium and aluminum. But even that's a lot denser, or a lot less dense than like iron and silver, gold, lead, that sort of stuff. A fun thing no one thinks about is the density of the moon.
Is that why its gravity is so low?
I would assume that that's definitely got to be a part of it, but it's also just way smaller.
Yeah.
I'm guessing if you had the same density of the moon, extrapolated the same size as the Earth.
Yeah, and no, we did
literally the exact same size.
Yeah, we did a problem in astrophysics, intro astrophysics, where we had to, like, do the orbit of a satellite going around the Earth, and the orbit of a satellite, if it was 1,000 kilometers below the surface, and it's the same because of the ratio because you have the same density.
But even if we're not, like, mining for, like,
yeah, but
actual, we'll still need, if it's going to serve as a way station between here and Mars, which I think in 20 years we can start thinking about being actually something that starts happening, there's going to need to be people there to, like, man that way station, because they're going to they're going to need to mine, like, say we're using helium and oxygen as our fuel, as water. There's a lot of water on the south and north pole of the moon.
Yeah.
I don't know if you mine ice. What you would call doing that, but there needs to be someone there doing
it. I don't think that there's actually an industry for the consumption of ice right now. That'd be a new thing. This started out like kind of boring, and then they're like, space, expansion to space, realistically.
Expansion to space.
These are things that, like, would have to be created, is like a way to irrigate plants for CO2.
You should write your PhD.
A way to mine. I probably could.
I don't know that anyone has thought about that before. Like a localized distribution of... I always hear about, like, general form, like general terraforming. I don't hear about, like, localized, like, here, sprinkle some CO2 on your plant. Like, that'd be kind of
cool. You can make little pellets that, over time, distribute CO2 into the air and put them beneath your plants.
PhD thesis.
Could you enrich soil with CO2?
If you don't take this PhD thesis, I'll take it.
Dude, I want to study rocks, not plants. I'm on the exact wrong side of things.
Space, though.
Henry, I give you permission, and this is by witness of every single viewer of the This Is Rocket Science podcast, to take that as your thesis for a PhD.
Thank you.
Just make sure to cite the episode.
That'll be my whole... This episode will be my entire PhD thesis. I'll just submit this.
And obviously, like, your techniques for mining, like, sheets of ice would have to be something insane.
Yeah.
Would you do it...
With low gravity, too? I don't know.
Oh, low gravity, too. You could totally get one guy moving massive sheets of ice.
Yeah.
Like a construction guy moving giant sheets of drywall or something.
I mean, this really changes, like, all of mining, right?
Because and it's ice, too. You don't have to have, like, a diamond chainsaw. You can just have, like, a warm piece of metal.
Yeah.
You can just have, like, your frame of your sheet...
But you also don't want it to, like, evaporate. Or would you just cut it?
Oh, that's true. But cutting would create friction. You have to do, like, a frictionless way to split it.
Yeah, because it would just sublimate immediately if it, like...
If it was hot. You're right.
If it was hot at all, you know.
Or maybe you could find a way to, like, super chill down something as you're cutting it.
These are things we're going to have to legitimately, like, solve.
Now, this is something more that I could do because it's more mining stuff. Because glaciers are rocks. I'm not joking. Glaciers are rocks.
Really?
Yeah.
You call glaciers like it's just like
a glacier is literally a body of rock.
Interesting.
It's just a lot of ice on it.
No, the ice is literally the rock.
Is ice like a mineral?
It is. It meets all the qualifications of mineral.
Inorganic.
It's inorganic. It's got a defined chemical
composition.
There's varieties in most mineral compositions because you can replace certain things and have the same structure. It's got a defined crystal structure. It's naturally occurring. Naturally occurring is one of the big ones about it.
Because it can't be, like, plutonium or something?
No, it's not that. It's that you can't, like, if you make ice in your refrigerator, it's not a mineral.
Oh, interesting.
But if a snowflake would be a crystal, that is a mineral.
Wow.
And I bet you on colder planets, people will collect ice crystals like I collect regular crystals here.
That's pretty cool.
But, you know, you get a giant deposit of that, sedimentary deposit, glaciers. It's technically a body of rock. Weird to think about. Obviously, we don't mine that here. But that would be, yeah, so you probably want to mine ice for your consumption. And I think that there are processes you can do to extract water from certain asteroids. I've heard people talk about it before. I haven't read about that much.
I mean, asteroids, it's basically zero gravity, what you're working with there. So that opens up a whole new range of techniques. It's like, 0.01 G. Or something. I mean, small asteroids, you might as well not have gravity.
You have to make tools, too, that, like, literally mount yourself to the asteroid.
Yeah. There was one of that Japanese mission that landed. We talked about it
last year.
the one that landed on an asteroid, like, because there's such low gravity, it's like falling 1 centimeter per second from like 5 meters up, and it just bounces off the surface, and it is bouncing for like 5 hours, like every bounce, like 5 hours, like 3 hours, like two every bounce, just because there's basically no gravity, so it's taking incredibly long to move. So yeah, we'd have to mount ourselves to the asteroid somehow.
Well, I'm just imagining like myself, I'm doing regular mining stuff on the planet, I'm railing on these rocks to try to break them apart. And I just imagine, you know, you throw back your sledge, it's going to pull you.
Yeah.
You hit down, it's going to push you. And you're putting a lot of force into that. Because, you know, they're rocks. They're hard. You'd have to mount yourself somehow. And have to be tight enough that you're not, like... I imagine, like, you know, you get, like, maybe two, like, little O-rings that you drill into the whatever your asteroid body is. And, like, maybe rope yourself to them somehow. I think rock climbers have stuff like that. I don't know enough about rock climbing. Someone could tell us about that.
Hmm.
I think rock climbing techniques would have to be incorporated a lot into the idea of space mining. And you probably have to make specialized suits, too, for it.
Because you need to be able to move.
You need to be able to move a lot. You need to be able to not overheat. You need to have, like, a system, too, that, like, that what you're hitting doesn't fly off.
Yeah, because it's in zero G, so it would just be gone forever. Like, think about all, like, the shrapnel that creates, too. Like, if you actually smashed something. Like, when it's in zero G.
You might just... I know that in a lot of really high-end gem mines, the ones that are producing gems that are, you know, 6 inches and bigger, what they'll often use to collect it is diamond chainsaws. And they will literally just hold the chainsaw into the rock and cut it apart to get what they're trying to get out. Maybe you could find a way to incorporate that. And what do you... Well, I don't know the thermodynamics of vacuum. Would your thing instantly cool off, or would it not cool off at all?
What do you mean? The chainsaw?
Like, yeah, so if you're heating it up like crazy, in regular air, that heat's diffusing into the air.
Yeah,
in a vacuum, does your heat diffuse? I don't think
it would. It would radiate away, but that takes so much longer.
It would take longer.
Yeah.
So you'd have to find another way to cool it. And you still
To say you pour water on it, but the water would instantly turn to, like, ice crystals, right, if you, like... Or instantly evaporate, actually, never mind. Because there's no pressure.
Because it would heat up really... It would heat up a lot faster, I think. Maybe you'd have to get, like, a rotation of them. And, like, a special unit that you carry on with you. So, well, you'd have one guy cooling them off in, like, some special unit that you can cool them off in. Sorry about hitting the mic there, boys.
And then you just rotate out, like, the chains. Or something.
I don't know. Because you could obviously, you know, you just cut out a block of whatever your ore is. You know, you send that to whatever your collection unit will be. Man, this is a lot. I bet you no one's really... Well, I bet you at School of Mines they've been thinking about it.
Probably. Yeah, they have a PhD, program
in space mode.
Space
mode,
yeah.
Hey, are you enjoying the show? If you want to get updates or see our memes, make sure to follow our Instagram account, @ThisIsRocketScience. If you're really, really enjoying the show, leave us a positive review on Apple Podcasts. If you didn't like the show, give it a 5-star review anyways. This Is Rocket Science is the Columbia Space Initiative podcast, produced by Henry Manelsky and David Tibbetts. Executive producers, Natasha Dada and Luke DeCruz. PR director is Anthony Odessa. Consultant is Logan Tedder. Audio is mixed by Micah Weiss. Edited by Kate Steiner. That's all, folks. Do